What follows is a recovered video recording of the Gotham City G-Harmony online dating service.
It's rolling. You can get started anytime.
My name is Bane, and I don't know how to start.
Just start talking with who you are, what your job is, and what hobbies you enjoy.
I am a former member of the League of Shadows. But let's not stand on ceremony. I was born to the darkness. I never saw the sun until I was already a man, and by then it was nothing but blinding. I am self-employed and enjoy long walks in the sewer. Is that okay?
It's fine.
My other likes include theatrical and deception, powerful legends to the uninitiated, but we will become initiated, won't we? Go out with me, parties will be convened, spells will be enjoyed. Blood will be shed. The police will survive as they learn to serve true justice. This great city, it will endure. Gotham will survive.
What the hell are you talking about?
First we will have coffee, dinner, and if things go right, I will show you where I made my home whilst preparing to deliver justice. Please send me a response. If not, it will be extremely painful for me. I'm the instrument of your sexual liberation.
Hey man, maybe you should keep this PG-13. What are you looking for in a woman?
I don't date much. No one cared who I was until I put on the mask. My last girlfriend cheated on me with my enemy. I broke his back and imprisoned him in a pit in the Middle East.
Holy shit, dude.
She said I overreacted. But perhaps I was wondering whether it would dump a man by sending him a text message. I'm looking for a woman well-versed in the art of combat and terrorism, but also enjoys a comfortable night at home watching starving rats fight. Must love dogs. My turnoffs include mean people, Batman, and girls that cry. I like to keep a positive atmosphere. If something destroys our love, then what is done, and our relationship is in ashes, then you have my permission to cry.
Alright, man, I've had enough of this. This interview's over. This is evil, man. You're just evil.
I'm a necessary evil. Your camera and your advice have been important till now.
Please don't hurt me, man. You need me to control the video, man. Please don't hurt me. Please.
Do you feel in control? You know, I have to kill you now. You'll just have to imagine my date. Perhaps I should try J-Date.
Weekly Dose. prescribed by comic book therapy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Weekly Dose, prescribed by comic book therapy. A show that deals about comic book news and geek interest. I am Woody Supername, and with me are my lovely co-host, Dez, a.k.a. Muy Mariato.
Hola!
Hola, sir. And we got Norwood.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're still working on getting you a tagline, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, I can alternate just because of the fact that since I am one or more races, so therefore I have the ability to come up with different phrases.
Well,
you can say hola.
You already said hola, so I can't say that.
Hola, I ain't got no time for that.
I got no time for that. That would be terrible to say at the beginning of the show.
Alright, you may have noticed that we were without new episodes for a while. We weren't sitting on our hands, however. We were having technical difficulties, and we spent that time recording other episodes, several banked episodes, but we've been retooling the show. Hopefully you'll hear some of the material recorded later on. But we have a lot of exciting new stuff planned for the show for the future, so we're going to have some fun stuff for you, so just keep with us. I promise we're going to keep doing this every week, trying to bring you the best show possible. So how you guys doing?
I'm doing fine.
Doing fine.
Great. Yeah, I'm doing great.
Yeah, I'm looking good, feeling good, you know, drinking good. I'm good.
Dez, you kind of disappeared on the audience. They haven't heard any of the banked episodes with you, so.
Yeah, it's true. You know, especially with the banked episodes. Well, I did disappear, and what happened
what
was that
happened to you.
Well, you know, during my whole my comic book shop blues, I did find somebody, and that kind of turned out pretty bad.
Let me guess. What happened is she died in an explosion. And then you just decided to quit being Batman for, you know, those months.
I would say that's part of it.
Anymore.
It makes sense. Yeah, I would definitely say that would be the strongest case that yes, that she did die in an explosion, and I quit. What happened.
Somebody told me Tyrone kidnapped you. Is that right? Is that right?
No, Tyrone did not kidnap me. Tyrone's been in jail for I don't know how long, but I still don't even know. He blocked me on a visitor's list. Like, I don't know what the deal is with that. So, but it was just crazy, though. I mean, I met Gary Busey. He's just as creepy as what he says. I would not recommend hanging out with him. But it all took me back over here, and here I am within a new year, you know, just being able to catch up with my buds and to be back on the show. Definitely, I missed it. I loved being able to be a part of it, and here we are, just with, like, the core three that we do have, and I know just with us, we'll be able to move forward with the show and just take it to greater lengths.
We'll bring our other fun sidekick back, I promise. We have to have someone to poke with the pins.
Yeah, Codemaster.
Yeah, speaking of pins, we'll put a pin on that Gary Busey story, and we'll get back to that at a later date.
Oh, indeed.
That might be a whole show right there, man.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot to share. It's pretty epic. It should be its own movie.
A lot of tears, a lot of nudity.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to our new format of the show, we're going to move into Geek News with Norwood.
Hey guys, it's Geek News with Norwood. earlier in the week, it was announced that Robert Redford is going to be in the Captain America the Winter Soldier, the sequel to Captain America the First Avenger. And he is quoted as saying, "I'm doing this film because it's different. It's a new thing for me. I think these films are really powerful. I think they are great. This is the kind of film I had loved to see as a kid. I like the idea of stepping into new territory. I'm excited by it. I also think it's a great bunch of people who really know what they're doing." I don't know about you guys, but Robert Redford being in this movie is a definite plus because he is, you know, great A actor, you know, so he just brings his name along, and everybody's like, oh, that's Robert Redford. You know, from ages, you know, 10 to 80, they're going to say, oh, man, I love the actor. So that's going to be cool.
Yeah, I don't think that's a controversial opinion that yeah. that's a good movie.
So my next bit of news is Iron Man 3. The two versions were announced this week, one for China and one for the Americas and the rest of the world. Apparently, these movies are going to be completely different, with China having their actors that are featured in China, they're going to have bigger roles in the Chinese version. So it says Marvel's. I don't know how to pronounce her name, so I didn't add them in there. But it says Marvel Studios and DMG announced that a Chinese version of Iron Man 3 will be released in China on a date to be announced. The Chinese version is said to include significant Chinese elements and bonus footage specifically prepared for Chinese audiences, which will most likely, I guess you can assume that later on when this year when they release the Blu-ray and the DVD, that it will be on there. So hopefully later on in the year we'll be able to see that. Also with Iron Man 3 news, earlier this week, the Iron Man 3 Facebook Unlock Armor app revealed several different armors that will be featured in the movie. These armors include the Mark 39 suborbital suit, or the Gemini, the Mark 38 heavy lifting suit, Igor, which, I mean, we all know is the Hulkbuster armor. Come on.
I knew that.
The Mark 40 hyper velocity suit, or the shotgun. The Mark 33 enhanced energy suit, or the Silver Centurion, which our boss Pedro loves.
He's been blowing up all my social networking with the Silver Centurion garbage.
And the Mark 17 artillery level RT suit, or the Heartbreaker. This one looks pretty awesome to me. The last one is the Mark 35 Disaster Rescue Suit, or the Red Snapper. It has the claws on the suit. I guess it's for, like, saving people. I don't really know what it's for, but,
for disaster rescue.
Yeah, disaster rescue. It's got the claws, you know.
Got the jaws of life right on the stand.
Jaws of life, mm-hmm. Or if you need a teddy bear, it'll reach out and grab you a teddy bear if you want, maybe. I don't know. Also, in other news, Wolverine trailer was released this week, an international trailer and a regular one for, you know, the rest of the world, of course. U.S., I guess. The Wolverine trailer was released online and gave us our first glimpse at what director James Mangold has in store for us. Two versions were released, and they introduced us, gave us our first glimpse at Viper, and Jackman has some quotes on Viper's character. He said, "Viper is badass for someone who plays Wolverine, who is also pretty badass. She's not your girl next door. You're going to end up kind of loving every minute she has on screen."
Mm-hmm.
Also, Jackman has a quote about the Jean Grey cameo. He's quoted as saying, "There's no doubt that the most important relationship in his life is, we've seen through these movies, is his relationship with Jean Grey. Yes, we saw her die at the end of X-Men The Last Stand, but in this movie she has a presence, which I think is vital to the movie, particularly for him confronting the most difficult thing within himself." Which, if you watch the X-Men movies and Wolverine, which I'm not sure if they're even going to count the Wolverine Origins movie, but, you know, he always has this inner struggle with, you know, his beast within type deal. And so, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but after the trailer, I'm a little hyped. I mean, it was like zero for me, but after the trailer came out, it was maybe around three now. You know, I'll definitely have to see more on this. It's a Fox movie. I'm not expecting the best movie ever because of that. They changed the character of Viper. It's definitely, she's Madame Hydra, basically. You know, Viper is that, and it seems her power is snake skin or something from the trailer. I don't know. And you know, we got our glimpse at a Silver Samurai, the armor that he wears. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the pictures I thought were great. I was like, oh, this looks really Silver Samurai ninjas. It has the the two Asian girls that were from the Wolverine Japanese saga. I was like, I'm on board. And I saw it, I was like, I'm not on board anymore.
Yeah.
My problem was it looked like a lot of CGI action again, which never works out well. And it seemed like it was very plot heavy, very a lot of stuff that didn't have anything to do with that book.
Yeah, I mean, if they had took straight from the book, it would have been a good movie. I mean, it will be a good movie, but
that's plenty of plot for them.
Adding Viper in there and this whole deal. See, in my head, this is the way the movie went. He went to Japan. He trained. He might have left when, I don't know the characters in it, but he might have left or whatever. Then his master, he heard that he died. He came back from the funeral. Silver Samurai attacked, trying to take over the organization. Okay, that's a simple plot. It would have been an easy movie to do. But they're complicating with this whole Viper thing. You know, I don't know what the deal is.
You know, and it's like,
you go, Des.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think about Wolverine Origins, and we know the origins, we've read the books, we know the material, but yet the fact that they just figured, hey, let's just make this a Wolverine All-Stars movie. Let's just add all these different people in that have nothing to do with Wolverine himself. And it's like,
Gambit.
Come on, people, exactly. That's one of the things that ticked me off the most.
Talking about wasting Gambit. The character.
Exactly. And, you know, now we have the same exact thing with this movie. You know, like, especially when Madame Viper was announced to be in the movie. And I was like, why? And then, like, also with, like, Jean Grey, you know, being in this too, and I was just like, why? You know, I mean, I understand that they're trying to tie everything into the movie universe, but it just does not make any sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, at the same time, I'm just kind of baffled about this. I know that the theme of this movie is supposed to be immortality, and they are still trying to tie everything in. They try to make it seem like he has a cure, his immortality, so he can die as a man and go from there. Which
That's the thing that bothered me.
Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at that, I'm like, well, I've never really, for myself personally, I haven't read where Wolverine wished he was a normal man or something like that.
Yeah.
From what I've understood, I always wished that he probably would have just been able to have someone to love and to be with somebody for the rest of his life, whatever. I mean, that's what I could see, because as many times he goes through so many redheads, it's ridiculous. And, you know, and it's just nuts, though.
Well, automatically, from the trailer, you hear, like, oh, I can cure you or whatever. Well, he has these claws. That, I mean, the adamantium's not part of his mutation, but those claws were. So, like, if his healing power is gone, wouldn't he die because his healing factor is taken away because of that? Like, he wouldn't be able to
reject all the metal.
Yeah, like, to keep that weight, because he's like an extra 200 pounds or something, his body would have to metabolize at a certain rate to keep his muscles up so he could be strong enough to even carry that. But if his powers are gone, he wouldn't even be able to flip, you know, his claws out, and he wouldn't be able to walk or anything because his muscles wouldn't metabolize right or whatever. I don't know the exact science, but I'm guarantee you he would die from that. So,
here's the thing. He had a cure for immortality. There was the mutant cure.
Exactly.
They take the mutant cure, pop his claws right in his chest. That's it. Or find that kid that leeches your mutant powers away from you as an adult or whatever he is now, and kill him. Just give him a bear hug and shoot himself in the head. Boom, done.
Yeah, because apparently there's a bullet-sized hole in his head where he got shot from the origin, so he just needs to point the gun right there.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah,
I was like, whatever cure they're talking about or implanted, it's an adamantium bullet again.
The more we talk about it, the meter's going down from a 3. Now it's back to a 0. Yeah, I'm convinced.
Move
all right. Anyways, moving on. I think Dez or Moy Moriato has a report from the WonderCon talking about Pacific Rim. Go ahead, Dez.
That's true. Well, of course, today was WonderCon. We had our own Michael Worthen over at the panel where Guillermo del Toro was hosting it. And he got into a bit more detail, and just the fact that it was Guillermo del Toro just talking in depth about the film. And, of course, there was footage that was shown, with just showing the Jaeger fighting against a kaiju. And if you guys don't know what a Jaeger is, that's just a giant robot that they use to battle against these monsters. And, you know, stressing about this film, Del Toro said he wanted more physical pieces than CGI, because he wanted to make things more realistic as possible. Mm-hmm. And so the rooms that serve by the Jaggers control centers would tilt and move as needed, and they would make the huge pieces of the Jaggers to use on set like feet and arms. And they built several blocks of Hong Kong destroyed with the real robots, arms and feet, and then they would have the actors strapped into like the machine-like apparatus that controls the robots in the film. And he wanted the animators to fully figure out how they moved and reacted, just so that because they're not using the motion capture either. And so these robots are going to be around 20 stories tall, and it'll be about, you know, 9 of them that we'll actually see in the movie. And so back to the robots being the specific countries, Russia is going to have the hydraulics on their arms to be able to deliver the powerful punches. And while the Jaggers are run by 2 people, in China they're going to be run by 3 people, which they'll be called triplets. You know, so it's going to be quite interesting to see how the mind link will be able to work between 3 people as opposed to 2 for these people's armor. And that's it so far for the Pacific Rim.
All right, that's our news for this week. Now it's time for Woody Recommends. Sing me in there, Woody.
I got the stage for guys. The music was playing, Woody. The music was playing.
This music was by Gus. Hey, it's time for Woody's Recommends, yeah. You got one song on you, Norwood. That's all you got.
That's all we got, guys.
You're a punk. Alright, this week I'm going to be talking about Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, the graphic novel. It's set in the New 52. It's by Greg Hurwitz, and art is by Zoo. I'm going to destroy this name. It's S-Z-Y-M-O-N. I'm going to call him Simon. Simon Kudransky.
Simon Kudransky.
This is one of the first Woody Recommends that I've done that I'm kind of on the fence about. It's not one I loved. But I still wanted to recommend it. I think for fans of the Joker graphic novel from a few years back by, was it by Brian Az? Someone help me here.
Azzarello?
Yeah. I think for fans of that graphic novel with the Joker, I think this is a really good companion piece to that. And kind of the same reasons why I don't quite love it, it goes a little too far on the dark side. You know, Batman's always seemed a little more PG-13, maybe early bits of R, not quite as nasty as 7. and yeah. So that's kind of where this book goes a little bit. I really enjoyed the beginning of it. It does a really good job of showing Penguin as a young boy getting taunted by his family and everyone he knows for, you know, looking a little disfigured. It basically gives the psychology behind why he becomes sort of a crime boss. He's someone that if he lifts his finger, someone's fired, someone's killed. You know, basically, he's a powerful man, even though he's a small little ugly dude. He can have different women brought to him every night if he wants, and they have to pretend that they like him. He refers to it as sort of like a game. Everyone plays the game because he has the power. So I really like the beginning of it. Kind of where it sort of loses me is someone basically, if someone spills a drink on Penguin, at least in the DC new universe, he'll pretty much have your family killed, he'll have your neighbor killed, he'll have your credit ruined, he'll have everyone you know arrested, you know, he'll run over your dog. It gets to be a little ridiculous, you know. It's like, you know, just fire the guy or something. Have him beat up. it's kind of those little details throughout this book that sort of strain the credibility of it. If Penguin was that nasty of a person, I think Batman would turn his eye towards him a little more than he normally does. And that, And, you know, he in the old universe, he would always show up and beat him up, ask him questions, but he usually didn't focus all his energies on Penguin, because usually he was just doing more petty crime. He was selling stuff, he was fencing, whatever business stuff he had his hands in. He wasn't like the Joker going out and killing people on a daily basis, and Batman has his hands full, but it kind of makes you wonder why Penguin would be a crime boss at this point. I mean, he should be locked away forever. And there's some moments in this where it seems way too close to Batman Returns, where he's just completely sadistic, and he creates penguin-like machines to attack the city, and specifically to attack the children of the city. And I just started reading this saying, are they really going for the Batman Returns route here? I mean, he creates a robot penguin at one point in the book. And I was just like, yeah. I can't wait for this to be written out of continuity. With all due respect, I mean, I still want to say it was a fun read. A lot of it was good. One thing about it, at the back of the graphic novel, it contains the Penguin in He Who Laughs Last. And basically that was a story from an anthology series called Joker's Asylum. Basically just telling different stories about all Batman's villains. And this was done several years back. It's pretty much the same story as this, but it's one issue instead of five or six. And, you know, a lot of the details seem right out of it. They start with him as a kid, being laughed at, being mocked, showing that he has sort of a violent temper towards all that. Then he becomes powerful. Then he finds a girl he likes, and of course, he ruins it because he's a nasty, sadistic person, and then Batman beats him up. And you know, you see where I'm going here. It's kind of the same story, but it's a little more charming. It doesn't take as long to tell. So I kind of found it odd that they wanted to shine light on that. But anyways, I still wanted to recommend it. Like I said, there's a lot of people that will really dig the story. The art's pretty good. Sometimes I found it hard to know what was going on from panel to panel. But, of course, there's a lot of comic book artists that can't quite tell a clear story sometimes. But anyways, if you like the Joker book, if you like the Penguin, if you like the more hard R stories that kind of show how nasty these guys are, I would definitely pick it up. All right. We're going to get on to our first topic here. Obviously, Damian Wayne Robin is dead. And I think a lot of our banked episodes are me and Norwood just ranting and raving and bringing the hate tank on. But wisely decided not to bring that to you this week. What I wanted to talk about is, what effects will this have on the Batman family? What effects do you think it should have on the Batman family? And I guess I'm gonna start with Norwood. First of all, no one thinks this is the end of Robin. Who do you think our list of suspects are for the next Robin, and who do you want to take it over?
Well, yeah, I agree that this, as soon as you know, Morrison's off of this, I think they're going to bring him back, you know. It's for me, I feel like that's what's going to happen, you know. There's going to be like, oh, man, Damian's such a great character. We had this whole future built for him where he's the future Batman. How can he not come back? Why waste those stories? Why did I have to read those future Damian Wayne Batman stories if he's going to just be killed off? So that just tells me, you know, he's going to be brought back somehow. You know, one clue that you know, I don't know if you remember, Damian, like, he injured his spine, and his mother, Talia, got him and, like, healed him up and then brought him back. Like, who's to say that the person that she brought back wasn't, like, the clone?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, right there, that's another, you know, doubt that I have that, you know, that he's truly dead. But anyways, until he does return, I think the list of suspects are definitely Harper Rowe is probably the top character here. That, I mean, they've been since, I don't know, day one, it seems like they've been pushing her character to be more than just this you know, orphan with her brother. You know, she's really smart. She's a tech whiz. She tracked Batman. And, you know, definitely after Damian's death, Batman was just, like, straight nonstop fighting, and hadn't took a shower in days, and he was starting to make mistakes and all this, and Harper talked to him, and Batman said, okay, you know, I need to get some sleep, I need to calm down, and I think she might be my top choice for Robin, just because of, you know, she might not take the name, but she'll definitely take that as a placeholder, you know, for Robin.
I'm surprised. I thought you hated her.
There's just a lot of female characters already, you know, on the list.
Yeah.
My number two probably choice that they're going to pick is Tim Drake. Right now, he in the new 52, Tim Drake was never Robin. He was Red Robin from day one. For a year, he was Batman's sidekick, and then he went all
pretty much the same thing, though, right?
So, apparently, yeah. I think what's going to happen is if Harper Row doesn't work out, Tim Drake is going to fill in that place, and hopefully he'll be Robin, not Red Robin. So we'll see if that works out. I don't know. That's just a really iffy chance there. And then you have Damian Wayne, the real one, might come back and take the place of the clone that actually died.
Well, when you're dealing with Lazarus Pits and clones, it's like, come on.
It's inevitable.
if he didn't make it out alive somehow, something's wrong.
Yeah. So he had to be hated from day one.
So, I mean, that's my list of Robins.
All right, thank you.
I mean, why can't we have a South American Robin, but instead of Robin, call him Toucan?
Here we go.
He'll be El Robin.
El Robino.
Anyways, let's talk a little bit about the effects on the characters. Batman, obviously, there's no question he's just going to become darker because of this. I don't know how much darker he can go without becoming a psychopath. But
can't be darker than Batwing.
But I'm kind of wondering, after the death of his son and the second Robin to die, what's it gonna take for him to not go out every night dressed like a bat? I mean, I kind of feel like this is the one that should push him over the edge a little bit, just make him say, you know what, screw you guys, I'm out of here, or just, you know, go at Talia and the League of Assassins. Just like a bat out of hell, no pun intended, and just cross that line. I mean, she killed his son. I mean,
you know, I really think...
He's almost killed for less.
I really think what would happen is that within the comics, Bruce Wayne will meet Rachel Dawes, and once she bites the dust, that's when he'll quit as Batman.
Yeah.
He's like, Batman, Rachel Dawes died. I quit. Your son got killed. I still had to avenge him.
And once Gotham doesn't have a Batman anymore, all the crime will disappear.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they'll introduce Robin Blake.
Jesus. I would literally give up on comics if John Blake showed up. Moving on to Nightwing, though, what do you guys think? How's this going to affect Nightwing for the future?
Well, you know, this is what one of the aspects I really liked about Nightwing is the fact that they had that big brother, little brother relationship. And I really do feel that Nightwing is certainly one besides Bruce Wayne that's going to take it the hardest. You know, and he had that mentorship over Damian, and Damian did treat him as if he was the older brother. And I don't know, I guess this will cause, for me, like, I don't think it will take him away from crime fighting. Because I know the whole thing with the whole ordeal with the Joker, what he has done, I know that took a toll on him big time. And now adding on to this, the stress and the weight of Damian being dead, it's like, I'm pretty sure, I do believe that he's probably is going to go off onto his own for a while. I mean, still retaining the title as Nightwing, but he'll probably leave Gotham City.
Interesting. You know, I was thinking about this. A lot of people say, oh, this has been done before, and I'm like, it kind of has, which should make it worse by default on them. Like, God damn it, Bruce. You said never again, and here we are.
Exactly.
But I also kind of feel like this is completely different than Jason Todd. You know, Nightwing barely knew Jason Todd. He had a few run-ins with him. Tim didn't know him. Batgirl barely knew him and didn't like him anyways. Bruce hadn't been with him that long, I guess, depending on the story. Let's say a year or two tops.
Yeah.
I mean, it still affected comics, or the Batman comics, for 20 years. But with his son, I mean, that's even worse than the death of the Waynes, I think. The only worst thing you could do with him is maybe kill Nightwing, and that's, well, I guess that's not even worse.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's his son. I mean, you see that picture, of course, the artist drew him like a 7 or 6 year old. And he's just freaking crumpled, bleeding in his arms, and Batman just has this look on his face like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's just nuts, you know, and like it's like even just with the fact that Hal even Morrison said that he had plans to kill Damian as soon as he was created. And it was just like, well, what's the point? You know, it's like we can have, and this it's one of the things that really annoys me. I mean, like, I know death itself can cause everybody to have, you know, an emotional outburst. And I know it's a driven story point, but come on, it has been, in comics, it has been done to death.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, that's also no pun intended, but comics, I mean, comics just, like, drives death as, like, the motivational point or the emotional point that we're just like, oh my god, this time he gets serious. And it's like, come on, it's like, you've watched everybody else die. You've seen everybody else die. And it's like, what makes this point a bigger impact than the last? You know, and we've seen, like we've already discussed, we've seen people, you know, be raised from the dead. We've seen people come out as clones. Or even people just, you see people in the issues later, they're like, oh, they never died. It was all part of a dream.
Reality punch.
Exactly. It's like Scarecrow was behind it all, you know. You know, and it's like, I understand they're trying to make it interesting, because when I first heard about Damian Wayne, I was like, okay. But then after reading about him, like, I grew to like him. Like, I really enjoyed Damian Wayne. You know, I was one of those people that kind of was unsure about him and wanted to dismiss him, but as soon as I kept reading more material, I valued Damian Wayne. And the next thing you know, he's dead. And it's like,
what's
the point of making, like, a grounded character and just to go ahead and cut them away?
You know, I think, I feel like it was a misstep on the editorial's part to let Grant do it, because I mean, he still had to have it approved. It seems like, couldn't they have made everyone realize how much they liked the character? You know, really put him in mortal jeopardy to make fans think he was going to die without making it permanent or semi-comic permanent. Like, it's not going to be resolved in the next 6 months, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 1 year into the new 52, and one of the most exciting parts in new parts about Batman is the son, and it's gone. And it's not like part of a writer's larger plan. Grant Morrison is leaving.
Exactly.
His story, I mean, the death is going to affect his writing for like 4 issues, and then he's gone. He's going to be doing independent. He probably won't write Batman for 5 years. And now Scott Snyder is stuck with this. Like, maybe he had some plans with this. I just feel like it doesn't seem like the story is worth it to me.
And here they just killed him in this book that nobody read. Batman, yeah. Nobody read it. It's truthful, yeah. Nobody read that book. And the art was horrible. And at least kill him in the main book, for God's sakes. He's that much of an important character. Why are you going to save his death for this crappy book?
You know, if I'm Pete Tomasi, I'm pissed off right now. I mean, he has to know. I mean, you just killed off Robin, and I'm writing Batman and Robin. Now, the whole reason people are really buying this is because of Damian's relationship with either Dick or Bruce. And now, I'd have to be thinking, yeah, this book's going to probably get canceled or changed within the year. Anyways, I had one thought, and I want it's about the character's reaction. I don't think Tim Drake's reaction is going to be all that interesting, because he didn't like him anyways, but I feel like the Red Hood is a good character to pick to do a story arc based around this whole fallout. I mean, he's literally been in Damian's shoes. He was killed on the job. He was brought back by Roz and Talia from the Lazarus Pits. And Bruce, I mean, maybe they'll explain it, but Bruce isn't taking the body to the Lazarus Pit. I mean, he's been buried as far as I know. I kind of feel like that should really, I mean, if they're going to be true to character, that should bring a little of that back to the surface. He was pissed off that he was put in the ground, buried, forgotten. No one died to avenge him. And the same thing's going to happen. He's not going to kill Talia.
Yeah.
So I feel like they should really have that spark back to life again. It seems like they've started to become a little closer. And Red Hood and Batman should not be that close. I mean, you got a killer and the guy that and the dad that the killer hates. I mean, I'd really like to see a story come out of that. But as long as they're fighting Mystic cat people, aliens, and in space with, you know, Red Arrow, the trucker hat guy, and they're never going to focus on anything interesting like that for him, I don't think. But before I continue my rant any further, I'm going to turn the show back over to Diz.
Boom.
Boom. That's all you need.
Yeah, that is all you need. That is all you need indeed. All right. Well, now since it's back to me, it is my section. I'd like to be able to talk about Justice League Dark. As we know so far, Guillermo del Toro is going to be directing this movie and is going to be handling the Dark Universe for DC Comics in their film. Now, even during the WonderCon panel for Pacific Rim, Michaels also was able to be able to extract some news from Guillermo del Toro, as well as give us an update as to what to expect and how far along the movie's gone to. Now, straight from, you know, just Del Toro himself, you know, by way of Michael, Del Toro has one more movie, and then he's hoping to get a screenwriter. It's going to be announced for Justice League Dark to write the screenplay, and the main plan is to have Constantine as a lead character. You know, he's excited to have the ability to do the movie, and he's looking forward to using Etrigan and Deadman as well. According to him, Constantine will be the lead, and he will also be blonde, which was a huge gripe that I had with Constantine with, I forget his name.
Whoa, dude, demons.
you know, so that's one of the main things. But also, he's talked that he said Swamp Thing will also have found peace, and that Jason, the Etrigan, the Demon Blood, will be a night of Camelot.
Des.
Yes.
Swamp Thing will not bring you peace, my friend.
Hey, he said he found peace, so we'll see. But Del Toro is saying that, you know, Crimson Peak, that's his next project. But he said straight after that, and then he'll go ahead and concentrate on a Dark Universe. He said the script's not finished, but he does confirm the writer's bible for the film is. So I don't know about you, but I'm pumped.
Me too.
I am pumped. Mm-hmm. You know, one, it's a Dark Universe. It's probably literally one of my favorite universes, not because it's dark, but it's because the fact that it deals with the characters that I really do like, you know, and people, and pretty much it touches more on the supernatural side of DC. We have a lot of the heroes. We see a lot of the heroes front and center, but we never really touch base upon with, like, the supernatural side of things. And I really can't wait for this movie. And just the fact that Guillermo del Toro is directing it, My goodness, I know it's going to look fantastic.
Well, we can actually expect this one might come out one day, unlike the real Justice League, you know, the main Justice League.
That's what I find sad about it so far, that we know more about this movie in the process than Justice League. You know, and like, yeah, we know some of the characters so far for Justice League, what's going to be used, but that's about it. And the fact that we know that after one other movie, then this movie's going to take place, and it's like, if Justice League Dark comes out before Justice League, yeah, that's a big problem.
Yeah. They'd have to change the title, wouldn't they?
You know, like call it like Dark.
Well, what's the Justice League? You can't have Coke Zero before you've had Coke.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm never been a huge Etrigan fan, just because he seems to always show up in other people's books, and like if you're reading Batman or Green Arrow, it doesn't seem to fit that well. But I'm really interested in John Constantine, just from the brief amount that I've read about him, like in Swamp Thing. No, I'm sorry. It was the Sandman that I saw him in. It really, he seems like a fun character. Deadman, it's like these are characters that seem a lot more on the outskirts, a lot less normal Hollywood type heroes. Like the Avengers or the Justice League. I mean, you can tell a lot different stories with them, and I'm psyched.
It's great. Like, I do love John Constantine. I love the character, you know, and that's when, like I said, like, I only had to watch, like, the first 10 minutes of the Constantine film with Keanu Reeves, and I was already pissed. And, you know, just, it's like, not just the fact with all the aesthetics and even just with the appearance and everything, but just how he was handled. I was just like, no, this is not it, you know, and just the fact that we're actually going to see, you know, Constantine, you know, not just being Bond, whatever, but just the fact that we're going to see Constantine under Guillermo del Toro. And I know Guillermo del Toro is going to be faithful to the character, and also he will be just as faithful to everyone else that's going to be a part of the film. And, you know...
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
There's one thing he won't be able to be faithful to. He will not be able to let John Constantine smoke. Because Warner Brothers doesn't allow cigarettes in their movies.
Yeah, and that's nuts.
Well, I mean, just want to add one thing. The Constantine series just started. They released, you know, the new 52 Constantine. That he just had his number one. I don't know if you guys checked it out at all.
No, I haven't.
From what I hear, it's a good start. So, hopefully, if they do make this movie, you know, they'll get big sales for this book. You know, I hope they push the character and they're faithful to it. But, you know, this is the world we live in, where characters don't always get their due.
Nope.
Going to see Rocket Raccoon on the big screen before Wonder Woman.
Yep. A talking Australian raccoon.
Yep, and a talking tree. Too.
And a talking tree.
Well, we've been there, done that. Come on.
I am Groot.
A super talking tree superhero. So,
exactly. Yeah. So
that flies in space. So a tree that talks in space before you get to see Wonder Woman. Why?
It's ridiculousness. But yeah, I'm pumped, you know, and like I said, also see Deadman. Come on. Deadman's awesome. And like I said, like we've already talked about this, and Jason Blood and Etrigan being a Knight of Camelot. You know, I'm kind of curious as to who else would be a part of this movie. I mean, I could see Zatanna being in the movie as well, and I'm pretty sure that would be awesome to be able to have her, which would also be sad if she shows up within the team-based movie and she's a lead character over Wonder Woman before her debut.
Well, the way I would like to introduce her character is, if, you know, maybe they have a team and Zatara, her father, gets killed and then they bring her in or something. Yeah. That way it won't be just a bunch of dudes on the screen the whole time. We do have a female in there.
Yeah, no sausage press.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. You had something else, Des?
I do have something else. Just to take a break just from that you normally want to be having so far. It's pretty sad. The other day we found out about Callie Cosplay. She's a 21-year-old cosplayer based in Florida, and she is actually going through a lot of medical issues. And her health is not in a good place. She lost her insurance years ago, and her doctors are not able to figure out what's really going on with her. So she hasn't really necessarily been able to have the funds to go in and go to two different appointments to really see and pinpoint the problem. And actually, as I read from an update, she's actually going into surgery soon.
Yep.
But, yeah, you know, and definitely it really is sad. You know, she's very intelligent, hyper smart, you know, 4.0 student, but due to her health, like her grades, you know, social life and everything else in the sort just took a toll on it. And then it's just, it's very heavy, but she's going through so much, and she felt at times defeated, but at the same time, you know, just her attitude and her positive outlook is amazing. And she's going through it, but yeah, at the same time, she is faithful that everything is going to turn around. So if anything, I ask if anybody, if you help, please visit www.gofundme.com/savingcallie. Whether big or small, please donate. So far, $5,918 was raised in 4 days.
Wow.
And that's great. And the goal is $50,000, but definitely we will be able to make that goal. So anybody, please help out any way you can. Be a hero. Save a hero.
What's that website again?
It is www.gofundme.com/savingcallie, CALLIE.
All right, that about wraps things up for this episode. Stay tuned for our closing segment starting momentarily. Any comments or questions can reach us at the_weeklydose or email to podcast@comicbooktherapy. You can reach me at thewittydose, Norwood@ncreb1986, and Dez at Muy Mariado. Before we let you go, I thought it was time to check in with Val Kilmer. Remember when he was Batman? I present the Val Kilmer Diaries. Norwood, play that little tune. What a horrible day. First, I hear my character of Iceman is being recast for X-Men. Good luck making your teeth click, Sean Asmore. Then I call my best friend, Tom Cruise, to inform him my premiere tickets to Top Gun 3D must have gotten lost in the mail. I explain to his publicist, who I am for 10 minutes, I think she might be impaired in some way, poor dear. And she puts Tom on the phone, so I say, I'll be your wingman any day, Maverick. Unfortunately, he must have signal problems because our line was disconnected immediately. I'll try again tomorrow. I then went to the Dunkin' Donuts to pick up a couple dozen. Everyone there pretended not to recognize me to make me feel more comfortable in public. Not necessary, folks. I'm just like everybody else. Don't let my amazing talent, good looks, and wealth scare you. Well, I'll cut this short. Tombstone is on TV. I really made some great choices in that movie.
Oh, dude.
Oh, how did we get that? I can't believe we got the online diary of Val Kilmer.
You would think that for somebody as a high-profile actor, that he would make sure that even the most intimate and private, you know, just, you know, memories or even just pretty much data of his daily life routine would be held even close to him so that nobody would know. But
wrong!
Somehow, thank God for the internet. So, get it.
All right, that about does it for us this week. Tune in next time. Get off my plane.